Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, President Obama's chief political strategist in 2008 and 2012, David Axelrod, on his new memoir, including why Obama couldn't unpolarize American politics. Also, as part of our series, Living Cancer, we'll invite your calls on the best and worst ways that doctors have given you a prognosis or someone you love. And we will have the first ever Brian Lehrer Show Accent Slam. We'll hear four people read the same passage with their four different accents and see how differently you judge their character and intelligence and other qualities from the accent that they bring to the table. But first, speaking of judging someone's character and intelligence, what to make of the Brian Williams situation? Is his credibility now shot as a trusted news anchor because he overstated an Iraq war coverage incident and then gave an even worse apology for it? Or do we even know he overstated anything on purpose at all? Anyone see the Times article today about how our memories do exaggerate things over time? One thing we know from Jon Stewart last night.
Finally, someone is being held to account for misleading America about the Iraq war. Finally. Now, it might not necessarily be the first person you'd want held accountable on that list. But never again will Brian Williams mislead this great nation about being shot at in a war we probably wouldn't have ended up in if the media had applied this level of scrutiny to the actual war.
Yes, finally, someone being held accountable for lying about the Iraq war. Very funny. But did Brian Williams lie at all? David Carr writes the media equation column for the New York Times and once wrote a book about memory. Hi, David.
Radio traffic.
We will get David Carr up there shortly. And Andrew Tyndall writes the Tyndall Report, which monitors the three old network nightly newscasts. Andrew, welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be here.
David, do we have you now? All right, we'll get David Carr in a minute. Here's what I want to do. I want to build this around the relevant clips. I don't know if our listeners have heard these or heard these next to each other, so it'll help us to figure out how to judge this whole situation. Here's how Williams reported his experience flying in a helicopter at the time. It was in 2003, right near the start of the war. And notice that this includes a reference to being fired at near the beginning of this one-minute clip.
Radio traffic makes clear this routine mission is running into trouble.
We took fire on the way in. We currently are not under fire. I say again, not under fire, but we look for some type of security. Over.
We quickly make our drop and then turn southwest. Suddenly, without knowing why, we learn we've been ordered to land in the desert. On the ground, we learn the Chinook ahead of us was almost blown out of the sky. That hole was made by a rocket-propelled grenade, or RPG, fired from the ground. It punched cleanly through the skin of the ship, but amazingly, it didn't detonate. We should, of course, add one more note about the men doing the real work just a few feet from us. There is no way to overstate the comfort having an armored platoon look over your platoon in four helicopters shoulder to shoulder there in the desert.
Brian Williams, the original report in 2003. So, Andrew Tyndall, let's just start with the original report. Any alleged puffery there?
There is now.
Hang on. We got to get your mic. There we go. Now your mic's on. Go ahead.
People who were on that mission have been subsequently, since this controversy surfaced, have been interviewed by Stars and Stripes newspaper, which is the armed services newspaper. And there are details in that which are contradicted. He says he was flying in a convoy of four helicopters. Other people say it was three helicopters. Other people say it was two groups of two helicopters. When he says the helicopter ahead of us was hit, the word ahead is ambiguous according to these people. Now, nobody's said that these people that Stars and Stripes...
Ambiguous, like it was an hour ahead of them, rather than there was some convoy and it was 15 feet ahead of them.
That's right. That's right. I mean, so he's being accused of either clever use of words in order to make the jeopardy that he was in seem to be more extreme than it actually was, or he's been accused of misrepresenting what happened, or it's just one of those fog of war situations where everybody can remember things differently 12 years after they happened.
Here is what Brian Williams said on David Letterman in 2013, so that's a full 10 years after the original incident. This is now being cited as one of the times that he may have lied or exaggerated.
Two of our four helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
No kidding.
RPG and AK-47.
What altitude were you hit at?
We were only at 100 feet doing 100 forward knots because we had these massive pieces of bridge beneath us on slings.
What happens the minute everybody realizes you've been hit?
We figure out how to land safely, and we did. We landed very quickly and hard, and we put down, and we were stuck. Four birds in the middle of the desert. And we were north out ahead of the other Americans.
So in that version, his helicopter was hit. David Carr, I think we have David Carr now. David, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So what about the change from the 2003 report to the 2013 telling on Letterman? Even Letterman seemed surprised, like he'd never heard that before.
Yeah, I think he had told that story quite a bit, probably at home, around the bar. You dine out on things, and maybe you add a little 1% each time. And each time you add something, you end up further from the truth. I think in the first instance, the actual report, what was going on is TV drama, you know, an effort to, you know, create a sense of peril. In the second instance with David Letterman, he acts as if it happened to him, which, of course, it did not. I mean, I talked to one of the guys that was on the helicopters, and his thing was, look, we all lie. Happens. People tell stories. He should just apologize and say he got it wrong. He was not impressed with what Mr. Williams did to straighten it out.
Uh-huh. So here is Williams' on-air apology on the NBC Nightly News last week, which for many people has made the alleged offense worse.
I made a mistake in recalling the events of 12 years ago. I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire. I was instead in a following aircraft. We all landed after the ground fire incident and spent two harrowing nights in a sandstorm in the Iraq desert. This was a bungled attempt by me to thank one special veteran and, by extension, our brave military men and women, veterans everywhere, those who have served while I did not. I hope they know they have my greatest respect and also now my apology.
Brian Williams on the air last week. He mentioned his attempt to thank one veteran. The incident that really touched this off last week was when Williams said something similar about being in a helicopter that took fire in the context of honoring one of the vets involved at a Rangers hockey game. And it was after that that some of the other service people involved spoke out, I guess on Williams' Facebook page at first, and said, that's not the way it took place. And then Stars and Stripes, the military newspaper, got a hold of it. Andrew Tindall?
The egregious thing that he did in the tribute the Rangers game in the report on that was he actually showed the picture of the helicopter with the hole in the tail where the RPG, the grenade had gone through, and he said, this was my helicopter. Huh. So it wasn't just that he told a tale of being in the air, coming under fire, etc., etc. He actually showed the footage of the hole in the helicopter and told the untruth that he was riding in that helicopter.
So the central question, I think, and listeners, you can weigh in on this too, or say anything you want to say, or ask our guests anything you want to ask about this whole Brian Williams affair. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or keep using our Twitter or Facebook social media. A central question, David Carr, how convinced are you that Brian Williams made something up about being shot at in Iraq rather than his own memory truly puffing it up in his own mind over time, as he claims?
I don't know that those are really different things. I just think that in this instance, it's natural to storytell. He he has been very good at managing his image and adding to his luster as he went. He has the kind of celebrity that an American anchor, I don't know, Andrew has a historical perspective, that, but I can't remember a guy that was famous in this way, and that people that don't even watch the evening news know who he is because he's on Jon Stewart, because he goes to Dave Letterman, because he hosts Saturday Night Live. And in the course of telling stories, did he make a decision to lie about what happened to him? No, I don't think so. I think that he gradually gilded the lily until it turned into a whole different kind of flower and got him in a lot of trouble. It was creep. It was creep on away from truth into fiction.
But you're saying creep even to himself from truth to fiction in a way that he might not have been aware of until this all blew up last week?
Yeah, I wrote a book that involved the nature of memory. And each time you tell a story, it becomes your own truth. It hardens into the truth. And over time, there's something called the Ebbinghaus curve, which is kind of a forgetting curve, and the truth sort of drifts away, and the story becomes your reality, what it actually happened. Unfortunately for Brian Williams, this happened to other people, and there are people who don't take kindly to people eliding the truth. If you're going to tell a war story, it probably should not be about war, because you don't want soldiers on your tail. These are really smart guys who understand combat and care about the specifics of it.
Andrew Tindall.
Okay. What David says could be true, but if it turns out that the contents of his report back in 2003 are false, or can be said to be knowingly false, then all the theories about the curve and telling the story and reinforcing that all disappears, because the lie would have been told, if it was a lie, would have been told in 2003. Now, to me, there's a third alternative. You know, alternative A, Williams was telling the truth in 2003. Two, he was telling a deliberate lie. Three, he was inside a helicopter and he didn't know what the hell was going on. And he was reconstructing the events, having just been landed down in a desert. And he heard on the radio that there was fire. He was jostled around. Things were flying around, et cetera, et cetera. He assumed that the fire was directed at his helicopter as well. And he didn't know whether the convoy was flying in close formation or far apart. And he just telling the story the best he could.
There was a question. Go ahead, David.
I think that, you know, Andrew has covered television for a long time, and so have I. I think what's going on in that first report is darkroom magic, where you have, it's typical TV, where you have the radio traffic of one chopper being sort of pasted over Williams' chopper. You have you have juxtapositions that leave it ambiguous, and that, to me, is how TV operates, is pumps up the drama. In this instance, it brought acute focus onto the storyteller, which I think is a real mistake. In war reporting, war is something, if you're a combat reporter, that happens to other people, not to you. And his focus on himself is what got him in trouble over time.
Jim in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I always thought that journalists were professionally trained not to misremember things, and that they were professionally trained to reconstruct events as best as possible when they're missing or have gaps in information, and that they should be held to a higher standard than ordinary people, especially when they're in very prominent positions like Brian Williams. So I'd like your guests to address that, and thank you for taking my call.
Jim, thank you. And really, David, that was a central point of your column yesterday. So how would you respond to Jim?
I've got hundreds of letters just like it, probably not as articulate as Jim just stated, where people have an expectation. They've been disappointed and let down hard, and they don't care about what's on the margins of this, how it might have happened. They put their trust in this guy, and he let them down. And the expectation that Jim and others have has been built up over a decade by the promos, by the, you know, turn to us, we're the trusted source, we're the people you should know. And now payback is dear because people believe that, took them at their word, and they feel extremely let down.
I'm going to take another similar call because this is the most dominant thread on our board right now. So let me pursue it for one more caller. David in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Yes, good morning. You know, in the fog of war, I'm sure that things are a bit indeterminate. But still, the way that his recounting grew is a kind of a fish story, which is something we all do. Now, somebody like the poet James Dickey lied about his exploits in the war, but he's a poet. And perhaps that sort of fantasy made him even more endearing in the end. But if his son Christopher, who was a correspondent, did the same thing, I don't think he would be allowed to continue contributing.
Yeah, and even that, though, a little different from the previous caller, assumes that Brian Williams may have exaggerated this on purpose over time. David, are you also thinking that even if it was his memory running away from him, that as a correspondent and at that level, he needs to hold himself to a higher standard of memory, and we, the public, have a right to hold him to a higher standard of checking his memory before he says anything public?
Well, yes. And, you know, if he's not sure, maybe he should remain silent instead of aggrandizing himself.
Thank you. Or maybe he thought he was sure. Scotty and Elizabeth, you're on WNYC. Hello, Scotty.
Well, personally, I think all of this public flogging is a bit ridiculous. I don't know anyone in my lifetime that has not made some kind of puffery about themselves, especially over time in something that is important. What I think is important here is that, and what let me down, is that Brian Williams had a platform to promote himself on late-night talk shows and different things like that. Then you go from a newsman to a celebrity. The two should not meet. If NBC lets Brian Williams go because of this, I think they have culpability themselves for letting him get away with this. Let the guy go. He made a mistake. He's the best guy on the news. Let him go. Thank you for taking my call.
Scotty, what does the celebrity have to do with it? Was his credibility already diminished for you because he goes on Saturday Night Live and Letterman and things like that?
Well, I don't know if the credibility was diminished. It's just, you know, you watch it because you want somebody to give you the facts. And you identify with this person, you believe this person, you trust this person. It didn't seem the same. You know, why is this person, you know, having this platform? Yes, to build up another 10 o'clock promotion that they had on a different time slot. One, but, you know, you didn't see Walter Cronkite going around to these different types of things, if I'm not mistaken. And at 45 years old, he's beyond a bit my time.
Right. I don't think he did things exactly like that. So, Scotty, thank you. And let's pursue that a little bit, because that keeps coming up as our guests are Andrew Tyndall, who writes the Tyndall Report, which monitors the three old network evening newscasts, and David Carr, who writes the media equation column for the New York Times and once wrote a book about memory. Andrew, the nature of Brian Williams' celebrity, his brand, if we can call it that, is at once a sober network news anchor and, yes, this funny, glitzy celebrity who slow jams the news with Jimmy Fallon and things like that. How unique, how different from any other network news anchor in history. It's a long time from Walter Cronkite to now, and there have been, you know, a lot of shades of gray on these lines. How different from anyone else is Brian Williams?
Okay. If you think about when Brian Williams was first getting into the job of being a journalist, he would be the first one, him and the nightly news anchors, him and Katie Couric, would have been the first generation where getting into the job of being a journalist, the top of that tree, that career tree, would have been being a celebrity anchor. When Cronkite got into being a journalist, he got into being a newspaper man, and then television was invented after the fact. When the next generation, the Rathel, Brokaw, and Jennings generation came in, their model, the top of their career tree wasn't being a celebrity. It was being a crusty old newsman who had worked his way up and was a journalist first and foremost.
They were reporters on the beat before they were anchors.
Right. So the mentality of this generation of anchors when they came into the business, which would have been, I don't know, the mid-80s probably, mm-hmm. their mentality when they went to college, went to journalism school, decided their career was, if I'm really good at this, I'm going to be a celebrity.
Brian,
I'm going to tell the truth to people, yeah, but I'm going to be on television and people are going to know my name.
What did Brian Williams do before? I don't even know. I should know this. What did Brian Williams do before he was an anchor? Was he a correspondent traveling the world?
Sure. He came up through Channel 2 in New York. He was at WCBS TV. They hired, I think he was... at NBC News, after he was hired at NBC News, he was White House correspondent, and then he was on fledgling MSNBC, and he was an anchor.
Non-opinionated MSNBC.
Exactly.
So he came up through the regular ranks.
He's never been a foreign correspondent, and this example, this showcasing him of being a war correspondent, was precisely to fill in the blanks in his resume because he hadn't been a working reporter on all the beats. And so when the war came along, a year before he was going to take Tom Brokaw's job, he needed to check that box in order to have a full resume.
Huh. David Carr, what would you add to this context, and how would you judge it?
Well, I don't think there is really a precedent. Brian Williams has very significant performing skills. I mean, if you watch him on David Letterman or watch him with Jimmy Fallon, he's ready to go in context. I did a story a while ago with Mr. Williams about his... about his failed news magazine when that was launching, and he just looked at me and said, I'm a creature of live television. That's where I feel most comfortable. That's what I'm good at. And in that sense, he is, as Andrew points out, built out of different DNA than those that came before him. He is a performer. He is somebody who's been on the news. I've always thought that he was really good at his job. I mean, he's led the news during super tumultuous times. He, when they do drop him into big situations, I think he's always come through. I think he has been leading the pack for a reason. It's not like he is just some hood ornament on top of an apparatus. He's very, very good at his job.
But the question here of what builds credibility, the caller from Elizabeth said, oh, Walter Cronkite never went on The Tonight Show or whatever the equivalent was
He did a cameo on the Mary Tyler Moore Show where he met Ted Baxter.
That's pretty funny. And that was pretty late on, right? He was probably retired by then. But I don't know. You know, to believe that having a funny side of your public persona actually makes you less believable when you're reporting serious news, I tend to think they're irrelevant to each other, that it was always a phony line, a matter of constructed image in itself. You know, even in the old days, every bit as much as building image by hanging out on Letterman and Fallon, and the credibility of Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert that are kind of real show just how phony that line always was. David, how much would you agree or disagree with that?
I agree completely with what you say. To say that you can't crack wise and tell the truth, well, tell that to Colbert, tell that to Stewart. It's where America gets its news. They're used to seeing news with a smirk. And the comparisons to Cronkite, I don't think are completely fair because it's a very different ecosystem that these news stations, the broadcast news stations, are working into. They have to fight through the clutter, and they're in a declining business, and they're in a dogfight for attention. So the fact that their anchors will wander away from that chair in search of other luster probably made them happy until it didn't.
Before I worked here, I was news director of a music radio station where I also did a Sunday night jazz show. And there were people in the news department there who thought it shrunk my credibility as a journalist that I would go on the station on Sunday nights and play and talk about jazz. I thought it was absurd. But this is the kind of position that some people, probably more in the business than out of the business, have had. I think it's really changed a lot in you know, recent years, recent decades even. But I experienced that as to how picky people could be about what, in theory, would diminish your credibility. Jay in Westbury, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. It seems funny to me that, I mean, you know, this Monday night quarterbacking thing, everybody is, you know, just giving him a pass. I say compare it to the Bush administration's lie of WMB and, you know, juxtapose that with his lie and his credibility in terms of viewers hearing this person and relying on this person for newsworthiness. And compare both of them and come up with some kind of analysis, but call it what it is, a lie. That's what it is. And, and in fact, if someone lies on TV that we rely on for news, right, that's what he's there for, to tell us what the news is,
but that's,
not make up stories.
But you're taking the position that you're convinced, after all you've been hearing, if you've been listening to this segment and other coverage, that it, what you're convinced personally, that it was a lie or a series of lies, and it wasn't a series of, you know, his own memory playing a game of telephone with itself.
No. That's giving him a pass. That's giving him the excuse. If you're in front of a helicopter and you didn't get hit, and you're telling a story, you're telling a lie that the one behind you, that yours got hit, and you came down, and you were, you know, frightened about this event, given that your helicopter got hit. That's a lie. Mm-hmm.
Jay, thank you very much. And let me get Bernadette in Neptune City on for just a minute here. Bernadette, you were working in Afghanistan.
Yes. And there was an incident where I was at our office, which was guarded, and there was an attack in another part of the city. And we were required to stay in the office until it was safe to go. And eventually we could leave and go back to our compound. But I could swear afterwards that I heard shots when we were at the office. We had to stay there till about 11 o'clock at night.
And later
we were
trying
to be, like, not scared. We're okay. We're safe. And afterwards, I knew that we were sent back to our residence before the fight was over. And I'm wondering if that contributed to this memory that I was sure I heard shots.
When you're now convinced that you never did hear shots.
It's really bothered me because I don't know for sure.
Uh-huh. And so does this lead you to be softer on judging Brian Williams?
Yes, it did, although he is a journalist and he's supposed to be trained to double-check the facts.
Okay, so we're going to be out of time soon. Let me get a last word from Andrew Tindall and David Carr. Andrew, where does this have to go? What are the possible outcomes here and what would determine them?
Okay. A lot of people have talked about how this threatens Williams's credibility. I'd just like to point out that to be a successful anchor, and I think David alluded to some of this in his comments, but to be a successful anchor, sure, you have to be credible. You've got to be able to, people got to believe what you say. But there's all sorts of other skills that a successful anchor needs. They need to have rapport. They need to have a sense of proportion. They need people to believe he's got the same concerns as I am. People got to believe he's on their side and that sort of thing. So that's, wrap those together, and that is his persona. And it's nothing to do with the actual veracity of the words that come out of his mouth. It's the tone of voice that he uses when he addresses us as his audience. Now, the problem to me of this particular incident isn't the fib that he told, whether he actually got it right about which helicopter had the hole in it. The problem with me is that if the fib reveals a character flaw, it reveals him to be self-aggrandizing or vainglorious or someone who isn't like us, who's putting his own career goals above us, the audience. If that is the end result of this problem that he has, then he is finished as an anchor because he's destroyed his persona. It's not a question of whether he told the right story or the wrong story about what happened in the desert that time. That's the thing that's at stake here, is his entire anchorman persona.
David Carr, a final word.
I'm interested in his bosses deciding what to do. So far we've seen Mr. Williams make his own apology, kind of blew that, and then took himself off the air, I think out of a real belief that he was getting in the way. But you can't put yourself in the naughty corner. Who is in charge at NBC? Who is watching over the brand for the long term, and who's ensuring that the work of the men and women that put together that newscast is not damaged for the long haul? So I'm looking for, they had a bad week last week, I'm looking for the leadership at NBC and their parent to decide what they should do going forward.
Well, they'll have to get over a lot of online humor, like people making mashups of photos, putting them in the car with O.J. Simpson in the Bronco. I saw one this morning. Here's Springsteen thanking me for writing Born to Run with a fake picture of Brian Williams and Bruce Springsteen. So either this will be a moment or it will be the end of the line for Brian Williams. And we thank David Carr for coming on. He writes the Media Equation column for the New York Times. And Andrew Tyndall writes the Tyndall Report, which monitors the three old network evening newscasts. Thank you both very much.
Great to be with you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming next, how has Vision Zero changed your driving habits? Stay with us.